Welcome to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and it's good to have you with us. All aboard the midterm train. Our next stop, Pennsylvania, site of one of the nation's most competitive U.S. Senate contests.
I'm going to be a lot better in January, but he's going to still be a fraud.
Now that's Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor and Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate, John Fetterman. He's the tattooed former mayor of a steel town. And he was talking there with MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell earlier this week and referring to his opponent, Republican Dr. Mehmet Oz.
John Fetterman has been a no-show his whole life.
Now, Dr. Oz is a retired surgeon and a former host of a daytime talk show, a show that advanced unproven products and health theories that many in the medical community have deemed dangerous. This race is pivotal because the seat could determine control of the Senate. But at the height of the primary in May,
current lieutenant governor and candidate in this race, John Fetterman, is in the hospital and will stay there through at least tomorrow, election night. Yesterday, he announced that he went to the hospital Friday, where doctors told him he suffered a stroke caused by a blood clot from atrial fibrillation, or AFib.
Despite the stroke, Fetterman won the Democratic primary contest. And during the summer months, Fetterman limited his in-person campaigning as he recovered. This week, Fetterman spoke to NBC for his first in-person interview since the stroke. He used a closed captioning tool because he's been dealing with difficulties in processing sounds quickly. It's a common after effect of strokes.
I always thought I was pretty empathetic. Empathetic. That's an example of the stroke, empathetic. Yeah. I always thought I was very empathetic before having a stroke. But now after having that stroke, I really understand, you know, much more kind of the challenges that Americans have day in and day out.
And while at times during the interview, Fetterman struggled for a word, neurologists have noted that the stroke hasn't appeared to affect his cognitive functioning. Still, since the Lieutenant Governor's stroke in May, Dr. Oz's campaign has made it central to their messaging. Messaging that's not just oppositional, but often personal.
Rachel Tripp, Oz's senior communications advisor, released a statement to Insider that reads this way. If John Fetterman had ever eaten a vegetable in his life, then maybe he wouldn't have had a major stroke and wouldn't be in the position of having to lie about it constantly.
In her latest piece for New York Magazine, Rebecca Traister writes about the ways that the Pennsylvania gubernatorial race has become a commentary on American anxieties about strength, manhood, and masculinity. With me now is Rebecca Traister. Thanks for coming back on The Takeaway.
I'm always happy to be here.
All right. What is it that the U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania is teaching us about manhood and masculinity?
Well, it's very interesting. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania has a really bleak history of electing only white men so far to both of its Senate seats and as governor. So there is just, it's been a buffet of white men in Pennsylvania at a statewide level. And I was really interested in this race in part because you have in Fetterman an example of this. This guy is a 6'8" white man who wears hoodies and shorts and has been treated for years by the political press as an oddity, mostly just because of the shorts, right? Which is always, I always read these profiles are like, Pennsylvania's never seen anything like this guy. And I'm like, you've never met a shorts guy before? Like, it's really something about like the limits of the Beltway imagination. But, you know, part of the appeal, I think, of a candidate like Fetterman is the notion that he can speak to a strain of white voters that the Democratic Party has been bleeding to the increasingly radical right Republican Party for years, and that Fetterman can present himself as one of them. And part of that is by projecting a version of big, tough white masculinity, right?
Yeah, that kind of muscular Democrat, the sort of union guy, when I think about Joe Biden, for a long time being, Amtrak Joe, that he's kind of working class, but, as an older gentleman, he no longer has that sort of sense of, again, that sort of muscularity, that vitality. But of course, the stroke impacts that.
Right. Well, the stroke impacts that, it didn't necessarily have to. Oz and his campaign really seized on it. That soundbite that you played of the Rachel Tripp comment that was made in August, at first after the stroke, Oz, as a literal medical doctor, before he was a TV doctor, Dr. Oz, he's a real doctor.
Yeah.
And he took the humane and high road, which is like wishing him a speedy recovery and saying, you know, lots of people have strokes, people recover from strokes. And then in August, I think in part because John Fetterman, and I write about this in my piece, actually found a way to communicate very effectively through his period of initial convalescence when he couldn't be at rallies and doing public events. He wound up, his campaign did a very effective sort of set of Twitter burns and online social media campaign against Dr. Oz. That one of the things I reported is that John Fetterman himself was behind that, clearly finding a way that he could communicate that didn't require the kind of in-person auditory processing and conversational stuff that he was struggling to get through at the very beginning. And so he'd waged this really effective campaign against Oz. And in August, the Oz campaign turns ugly with that comment. And they really start attacking him, and in ways that are meant to physically diminish, to convey that he is enfeebled, to focus on his weight, that comment about eat your vegetables, mm-hmm. right? To focus, and it was interesting because it was happening at exactly the moment that John Fetterman began to reemerge in public, right?
But I mean... I can't believe I'm about to say this sentence. I want to be really fair, though, here, in that Fetterman also was doing some meanness. There's this moment when Dr. Oz is in the grocery store. He's having sort of this moment about inflation. And just hold on a second. Let's listen to John Fetterman here.
In PA, we call this a veggie tray. And if this looks anything other than a veggie tray to you, then I am not your candidate.
So why the veggie tray comment?
Well, that was some self-inflicted damage by Dr. Oz. Dr. Oz had done a video about inflation and the price of what he called crudité, and first of all, he'd walked into a Pennsylvania grocery store called Redner's, and he had gotten it confused with another chain called Wegmans. And in this video that his campaign had put out, he'd called it a Wegner's, getting the name of both chains wrong. Then he had done this, I mean, bonkers video about the price of crudité for his wife, where he'd picked out asparagus and talked about how expensive the asparagus, the guacamole was, and that was before you paid for tequila. I mean, it was not, it was a little bit of a cell phone, as the kids say. Fetterman's campaign and Fetterman himself did take a pretty scathingly funny approach. They use the social media language of kind of like vicious teasing. Now, I talked to Fetterman for my piece about what he and everybody in his campaign maintained was a very strict line between funny and mean. You are clearly hearing some meanness. I think they would all say, look, this was self-inflicted damage. He was putting this stuff out. A lot of what they were hitting Oz on was the fact that until extremely recently, he's actually lived in New Jersey in an incredibly large mansion that People Magazine has done spreads about. And he's running for the Senate seat in Pennsylvania. And so a lot of what Fetterman told me is we used his own material, and that vegetable video is an example of it. Oz put that video out there while running for Senate in Pennsylvania, in which he gets the name of Pennsylvania grocery stores wrong.
Okay, so if we've got one guy saying, look, I'm kind of the real man, right, Fetterman? I'm the real man because I call these vegetables, right? And we've got the other one saying, this guy's not a real man because he's sort of too weak to keep himself from having a stroke, right? Both of which are very odd ways of describing manhood. But I get sort of the cultural touch points that they're, you know, sort of poking on. But I guess I'm wondering, does it move us away from talking about, right, where Fetterman and Oz stand on the fundamentals that affect the voters of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it's really interesting because writing this piece was so much about the two characters, both of the ways in which they were fighting against each other. You know, the effectiveness of Fetterman's message about Oz living in New Jersey wasn't really about policy. Now, I would argue that it is relevant you know, it is a relevant question, you know, in terms of where do you live? Do you know the state that you are going to represent in the United States Senate? But it is not necessarily about their differences on abortion, minimum wage, marijuana legalization. You know, there are all kinds of labor, all kinds of things. Now, and there are really stark differences. But it's absolutely become a campaign of personality and drawing each other as cartoons in some ways.
Okay. In that cartoonism, which maybe also makes sense in a certain way when we think about sort of where we are in American politics at this moment. But I'm wondering, again, if there's one more thing that I really want you to sort of tease out for me. Isn't it reasonable to ask whether someone who's had a major health event is in fact physically and cognitively capable of representing the people he's seeking to represent?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely reasonable to ask. But the interesting thing for me reporting on this is that the arc of his recovery became very clear to me as soon as I started focusing on it. When I first went to a Fetterman rally, he had just begun to do events in public. And the first couple had been, he'd seemed a little shaky, actually. There had been a lot of derisive video circulating on Twitter of him, you know, getting words tangled. And watching him over the course of September was really pretty remarkable because every week in every rally, I saw him improve. And that was something that was really visible, an arc of recovery, which is not to say that the communication is perfect. And you can tell from the interviews that he's doing that he continues to miss words. But the other thing is that while his campaign has come in for a lot of criticism, and it's actually the model laid down in that mean vegetables thing, the mean vegetable comment about, you know, the idea that he's somehow lying about his health, the legitimate press has really taken off with that. In fact, his campaign has revealed a lot about his medical history, including the fact that he got diagnosed with atrial fibrillation 5 years ago and then didn't follow up with a doctor. That's something they've been very, very frank about. They've been very frank about all of the conditions that led to his stroke and his own behaviors, including not taking the medicine he was supposed to take and not following up with his doctor. So yeah, I think it's absolutely fair to want to get answers about a candidate's physical condition. But I also think there's been a lot of information provided about his physical condition. I don't really have questions as somebody who's reported on it, having interviewed him, talked to him, talked to doctors as I did when I was reporting my piece about whether or not this was typical recovery, and being told over and over again that yes, it was. So to me, it seemed pretty transparent.
All right. So we've talked a lot about masculinity. What does this race also potentially tell us about race?
Well, it's fascinating because as soon as the Oz campaign began to really dig in on this notion of weakness, which again, might have been a difficult prospect when you're talking about a 6'8", you know, 270-pound white man in a hoodie, right? But because of the stroke, there was this kind of opening for them to cast him as enfeebled and in some way infantilized, right? Eat your vegetables. Well, that begins to go towards softness. And then it can be connected imaginatively to some work that Fetterman was very public about as lieutenant governor. He headed up the pardons board, where he very publicly fought for the commutations of sentences of that he and a board of people deemed were overlong or inappropriate. And as a result, and he was very public about this work during the time that he's been lieutenant governor in Pennsylvania. And the Oz campaign specifically homed in on two brothers, the Horton brothers, who unfortunately share a last name with William Horton, you know, who was made such an issue in Michael Dukakis's campaign. And they began to run on this soft on crime message. The Horton brothers had been imprisoned for 27 years for a murder that it is widely agreed they were wrongly imprisoned for, and had had pristine records. They actually, there's a short documentary about them that I really recommend. It just won an Emmy a couple of weeks ago. And Fetterman had fought really hard for them to get out of jail. And in fact, after they got out of jail, hired them to work on his campaign. And the Oz campaign started hitting Fetterman hard for being, and this is all Oz's spokesperson said to me repeatedly as I, you know, was, Fetterman is pro-murderer, pro-murderer, pro-murderer. And they started running this incredibly dog-whistling campaign. The Horton brothers are black, talking about Fetterman as soft on crime. And we know from the history of talking about candidates as soft on crime, talking about Democrats as soft on crime, that this is coded. It is simultaneously feminizing and racialized language to suggest and insinuate that the Democratic Party, I mean, fundamentally is, especially using the Horton brothers, is somehow on the side of crime that is coded as black. To add to that, you have Newt Gingrich talking on television about how Fetterman's tattoos, he has a series of tattoos, some of which are actually the dates of death for people from the town of Braddock where he was mayor, who were murdered while he was mayor. But Newt Gingrich talking about how he believed his tattoos were a signal to the Crips. I mean, it's remarkable to see often how the feminization and the racializing language can go hand in hand, even as you're sort of, you know, by making connections with the Crips, you're also doing a hyper-masculinized kind of racist framing. But the soft on crime is the feminizing racist framing. And they're just throwing it all at this enormous white man.
Rebecca Traister is writer-at-large for New York Magazine, and you've got to read this latest piece. Rebecca, it's always great to have you with us.
It is always great to talk to you, Melissa.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.